The Sundance Film Festival wrapped up Saturday night with its award ceremony. Sundance is the premier showcase for independent films and launches the careers of many actors, writers, and directors. Robert Redford's Sundance Institute has run the festival since the mid-80s. It's held in Park City, Utah. Our critic-at-large, John Powers, attended the festival. We asked him to talk with us about some of the best films he saw. John, you started going to Sundance at the very beginning of the festival, but this was your first time back in about 5 years. How has it changed?
Well, when I first went to the festival in the mid-1980s, it was this very tiny thing with earnest, lousy movies. And you just thought, nobody here has any talent. And then over the years, it kind of grew. You saw the arrival of Steven Soderbergh and Quentin Tarantino and Paul Thomas Anderson. And it grew bigger and bigger and bigger. And through the 90s, whenever I would go, I would start being overwhelmed that it had become, right in the middle of Utah, this huge cultural event. I hadn't been for 5 years, and when I went back the first couple of days, I was astounded at how much bigger and crazier it had gotten since I had been there the last time. When I'd been there before, I thought it was as big and crazy as it could get. But now it's almost a bit like Fort Lauderdale during spring break. You know, in the old days, you know, it was packed with people partying, but they were all united by an interest in movies, even if the interest was nothing more than the desire to see Anne Heche or Ben Affleck. Now you actually have hundreds of kids who show up for the first weekend who don't care at all about the movies. They're there because they know that when that many showbiz people show up, they're going to be really cool parties. So the party people descend the first weekend. And also the first weekend, you actually have all the agents who are hoping to make the big deals. Because part of what Sundance's whole thing is these days is making the big high-profile deal that will both launch a film and show that your company is serious. So for like the first maybe 72 hours of the festival, it was a madhouse. At one point I was driving maybe half a mile in downtown Park City, and it took me 50 minutes to do it because I was following, you know, stretch limo SUVs. You would actually have these drunken kids spilling out while stretch limo SUVs are trying to make left turns. It was just an absolute madhouse. I thought, get me out of here. This is the maddest thing I've ever been in.
Let's talk a little bit about the movies that you saw. Let's start with some of the movies that won the top prizes. The top award, the Grand Jury Prize, went to a movie called 40 Shades of Blue. Would you have given it the award? Tell us something about the movie.
I probably wouldn't have. I mean, it's a nice movie. It's a domestic drama in which Rip Torn plays this kind of overpowering Memphis father who's married to a Russian emigre wife and has a son who feels kind of beleaguered and overshadowed by the sheer Rip Torn-ness of his father. And as anybody who's ever seen Rip Torn knows, when Rip Torn is going full throttle, the sheer Rip Torn-ness of Rip Torn is pretty impressive. And it's a story basically of people trying to find some sort of way of getting free from each other and trying to live. It's actually very slow, rather stately. It feels a bit like a short story. I liked it fine, but I actually liked better the film that I think that the jury might came quite close to giving the top prize to, which was a film called The Squid and the Whale. You know, if you're a veteran at looking at juries, you sometimes see these kind of odd patterns of voting. So although Ira Sachs, who made 40 Shades of Blue, won the top prize, he didn't win any other awards. The best director and the best writer is Noah Baumbach, who made The Squid and the Whale. And having been in jury rooms, I can feel that that's one of those cases where half the group thought The Squid and the Whale should win, half thought 40 Shades of Blue should win, and what they finally did was to say, we'll give the top victory, but we'll give the two big individual prizes to the other one. I much preferred The Squid and the Whale, which is maybe more my kind of film. It's set in the 80s in Park Slope and tells the story of Baumbach's family. His parents broke up in the 80s when he was in high school, and it traces what happens when this highly intellectual New York family breaks up and the kids have to deal with it. I mean, in real life, Baumbach's father was a novelist, Jonathan Baumbach. His mother was a critic and writer, Georgia Brown. And in fact, you see in this movie all the things that you very seldom see in American movies, how men and women fight over career things. You know, in the film, the mother's career is starting to do better. The father's career is starting to slide a little bit. That creates tension. That tension then enters the heads of the two kids. And it's actually very, very wittily and movingly played out.
Well, I'm really looking forward to this new movie. I'm hoping it has a distributor and we'll get to see it.
Oh, look at how it's, and it has just this unbelievably wonderful performance by Jeff Daniels, who plays the the bullying father who's always, you know, bullying it on the tennis court, is always pontificating about literature, and is, I guess, the whale of the title. You know, he just fills every room he's in with his self-pity, his self-assurance, and all the rest. And it's actually very nice for me just to see Jeff Daniels get that kind of role. Because, I, in the strange world of the movies, and you know this very well, Terry, there are people who you thought were going to be big stars, and somehow the world wasn't very nice to them. You know, 20 years ago, Jeff Daniels was, you know, in The Purple Rose of Cairo and in Something Wild, and everyone thought he's the coming guy. You know, and then, and within 10 years, he's playing in Dumb and Dumber and small little roles. And here you're reminded, boy, this guy's really a good actor.
Okay, well, the movie's called The Squid and the Whale. Let's talk about the movie that got the Audience Award, and it's called Hustle and Flow. What'd you think of this one, John?
Oh, it's rubbish, but...
But it's
rubbish that people, of a kind that's really fascinating. If you go to Sundance long enough, what you realize is that there's a particular kind of film about African-American life that Sundance always eats up. And usually it's that kind of film about life, a film about African-American life that's both streetwise and gritty and also life-affirming. So on the one hand, it kind of gives you lots of Rocky-style cliches, but it makes you feel like you're down, you know, with the, in the mean streets with the African-American people. I remember seeing the screening of the movie, and this was the big event of the opening weekend, was the screening of Hustle and Flow, you know, where the ex- or the co-chairman of Viacom had flown in, surrounded by people all looking nervously to see how he's reacting to the movie. Studio heads are on the phone saying, should we buy this movie without even seeing it? And the audience is jacked sky high for this movie. And it's, you know, the audience is 95% white and upper middle class in Utah. And the, what the movie is about a sensitive pimp who decides that he wants to become a basically a hip-hop artist and sort of realize his dream. And people actually do say things like, man gotta have a dream, dog. Anyway, this is what he does. And so, you know, when you first see him, he's busy lecturing one of the women who works for him before he sells her to somebody. Along the way, to get money for his project, he sells his women. But in fact, we're supposed to kind of be with him. And what's really weird in watching it is that the level of casual misogyny in the film is so profound that you realized if it was about any other group than women, people, you know, would be up in arms about it. In fact, everybody's fine. So, like, and there's one point where the sensitive pimp is writing his song about how hard it is to be a pimp. And in order to make the song about how hard it is to be a pimp better, he gets one of his prostitutes to sing a chorus. She's not singing with quite enough heart, so he pops her to make her sing a little bit harder. And the crowd ate it up. I simply couldn't believe it, that somehow the desire to be with the happening thing and the racially happening thing and the big money thing at Sundance causes people to lose their minds sometimes. And I think that's what happened with Hustle and Flow. A few years ago, it happened with the movie Slam, where all of a sudden everyone thought, this is the real black experience, slam poets. And, you know, there was the same kind of thing where the audience went berserk, and then, in fact, nobody wanted to go see the movie.
This story also has the big, like, financial studio drama behind it, too. What's that drama?
Well, the drama is that this was the film from the very beginning that everyone thought was going to be the film that was going to make the most money. That before the festival had started, the Los Angeles Times had already run a piece talking about the crazed bidding that was going to take place for the film. You know, and in fact, so that there's in the run-up, before people have even gone or seen the film, the media is already building up the thought that John Singleton has this movie that he's going to sell for lots of money. Once that gets started, the apparatus starts rolling. Every industry person has to be there. It was the hardest ticket to get at Sundance the entire time. As I say, I talked to people who ran specialty film divisions at major studios whose bosses were on the phone saying, let's just buy it without seeing it. And you're talking, in this case, about maybe spending $7, $8 million. In the end, it sold for $9 million and got a two-picture deal beyond that for the director, Craig Brewer, who, in fact, is a perfectly serviceable talent. You know, it's not as though he's terrible. It's just that when you're having the great celebration of independent cinema that is Sundance, to have the movie that everyone thinks is the hot movie be basically just a old-fashioned Hollywood movie, but dirty, is a very funny thing.
Well, you told us about one of the movies you really liked a lot, the Noah Baumbach film, The Squid and the Whale. Is there another film you'd like to single out that you really like, whether or not it won an award at Sundance?
Well, there's a film I liked quite a lot called Thumbsucker, which was made by Mike Mills, and it's based on a novel by Walter Kern. It's his novel. It's about a kid who basically can't fit in society, and he goes through various encounters trying to sort of make peace with his life. You know, so he actually has to go to his Zen orthodontist, played by Keanu Reeves, and he's in a debate class where his debate teacher is, of all things, Vince Vaughn, and it's a very accomplished film. The guy who made it, Mike Mills, is sort of part of that group of people that includes Spike Jonze and Sofia Coppola. And one of the things that's interesting about them is that, you know, they come out of video and commercials, yet more than most people who do that, they have a very real gift to somehow actually tell stories and keep the things human in a way that lots of people who come out of that can't. So this actually has, you know, there's a very wonderful young actor named Lou Pucci, who I think is going to be a star. He's got a very sweet face. It's kind of, if you can sort of imagine Johnny Depp a little less pretty, but the same kind of soulfulness and same kind of radiance that you really want to watch him. You know, I mean, he actually was really, really good in the film. And I like that. If I can mention something else on the opposite end, you know, one of the nice things about Sundance is that although you often hear that it's a hideously commercialized place, every year it shows scads and scads of things that are interesting and good that really don't have any commercial life. One of them is called Symbiopsychotaxiplasm, Take 2.5, which I saw, which is a wonderful film. It's made by an African-American director, William Greaves. And what it's about, and it's a very tricky thing, is that it's set over 35 years. It actually begins with a film that Greaves made in 1968 about the romance between a white man who's apparently gay and a black woman. They're actually married, but it's a white gay man and a black woman. And in fact, that film is the story that's being told in 1968. But there's a secondary story in the original film, which has to do with how the crew is reacting to William Greaves telling the story of the gay white guy and the African-American woman. And in fact, the original version of the film, which was released in 1968, is in fact a classic 60s production of criticism, self-criticism, because it not only tells the narrative story of this couple, but it also tells the story of the making of the movie about this couple. And in fact, the drama and conflict is much harsher between the crew and the director than it is between the man and the woman.
John, say the title of the movie again so we can remember it.
The title is tricky. It's called Symbiopsychotaxiplasm, Take 2.5. I would add one other interesting thing about this film, which is that it's presented by Steven Soderbergh. You know, one of the nice things that I've always liked about Soderbergh as a Hollywood person is that you often find his name attached to these interesting, weird little projects where, you know, he puts his little bit of help to help somebody get a film out that isn't commercial, but it's doing something that really interests him. And if you've watched the Soderbergh shows like K Street, you realize he's very interested in process. And the Greaves film is a film about process, the process of making a movie. So it's a natural thing. But Soderbergh was there to support the movie, which is a very good thing.
So are there interesting insights into acting in this movie about the making of a movie?
Oh, yeah. It's actually, I think, maybe the best movie about acting I've ever seen. And normally you hear people talk about acting, you know, they tell various anecdotes. But here you're following the process of people shaping performances. You know, you have the method person coming in, and you kind of have the primal therapy person coming in. And you watch them play it in different ways. You watch the actor be unhappy with the way that the actress is playing the part. You watch the actress be unhappy with the way the actor is playing the part. You watch the director be unhappy with the way the actor and actress are playing the part. And you gradually get to see how what seems like a simple thing, which is this man and woman talking on a screen, is this result of this incredibly complicated process of back and forth where they're working everything through and in fact is deeply connected to their sense of themselves, everything from their, you know, from their fear to their vanity.
I can't let you go without asking you about your favorite party moments, if in fact you went to any of the parties at Sundance.
Well, I went to a lot of parties at Sundance, partly because that's where a lot of the action is. The best party to have been to, I think, was the one for Inside Deep Throat, the documentary that Universal is about to bring out about that famous oral sex movie from the 70s that's the most successful movie of all time. And in a really interesting thing, Universal Pictures decided to have a party in what I believe is normally a yoga studio, where you came in and they played 70s music and showed kind of clips on the wall while two strippers gyrated in the middle, doing all of this. I mean, I'd never been to a party thrown by a movie studio that had quite that feeling. And they had been flown in from L.A. to strut their stuff, to give you that kind of sordid, tawdry 70s feel. You know, and there are a couple of funny things about it. There's a great moment when the film's producer, Brian Grazer, who people would know as he's the guy who is Ron Howard's partner and who made a beautiful, who you saw him on the stage accepting the Oscar for Beautiful Mind, and is considered a high-minded fella. Well, he's produced this movie about Deep Throat. And he's there standing, kind of giddy and happy at the whole party. And behind him, the two women are gyrating, simulating sex acts. And I saw a photographer racing up to get a photo of Brian Grazer in front of these women. And the Universal publicist very tactfully pulled him away, knowing, that it's one thing to actually have this kind of secret party where all this is happening. In a small place in Utah. It's nothing to have the entire world see one of the prides and joy of Universal at this party, standing right gleefully in front of strippers. The other thing that was sort of funny was that I was told that some of the locals were slightly put off that they actually had to fly in the strippers from L.A. They were slightly offended because, in fact, there is a strip club in Park City, Utah. So you didn't actually have to fly in stripping talent. And I thought this was like the weirdest spin on the blue state, red state thing of all time, which is, the blue state elitists, are condescending to our red state strippers. I thought, okay, the world is just too nuts now.
Well, sadly, John, one of the souvenirs of Sundance this year was the flu, which you're recovering from now. So I want to thank you for talking with us today, in spite of the fact that you're a little under the weather. And I hope you feel better soon.
Oh, sure. No, actually, one of the fun things about Sundance is that it's kind of like being at summer camp or kindergarten. You're there with your friends and you're running around and you're keeping crazy hours. And just as everybody always gets sick together in summer camp or in kindergarten, when you go to the same movies over and over again with the same people, it's like some sort of huge petri dish for viruses. And eventually everybody gets it. And I happen to get it this year.
Okay. Well, John, thanks so much for talking with us.
My pleasure.
John Powers is critic at large for Fresh Air and film critic for Vogue magazine.